This is Yetta Chagin taping Hilda Coder, December 20th, 1999. Hilda, give me your name, your date of birth, and tell me where you were born.
My name is Hilda Coder, Hilda Cohen Coder, and I was born June 15, 1914. In Philadelphia, and I was the sixth child. There was another one afterwards, but my family came to Wilmington a couple of weeks after that, and I'm very sorry I never asked my mother how she got here.
Or why?
I can tell you why. My uncle had gone to Newark, Delaware.
Who was your
Lewis
uncle?
Lewis
Hanlow.
In Newark. And I think he was the one, my aunt, they did persuade her to come to have a better chance here.
So, even though Lewis Hanloff and his wife lived in
Newark,
your family came to Wilmington.
Yes.
And what was your father's name?
Abraham.
And your mother?
Anna Ida, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Is in English.
And Hannah, Chana.
Yeah, well, my father called her Ida, my grandmother called her Hannah, so
okay.
Either name is appropriate.
All right, and then your family came here, and what did your father do?
In Philadelphia, I really don't know. I know my mother, when she came over in 1901, worked in a shirt factory. And my mother was so efficient and so good. She put in this. Her job was putting the strip in the inside of a man's collar on shirts. She made $25 a week in the day when men were making $9 to support a family. But the union came in and they went on strike and they were all arrested and so forth. And from that day on, she never made $25 again. And I really don't know too much about what my father did. I know mostly about my mother.
Mm.
He probably worked in one of those factory places.
And how did he live a long life here?
No, my father died when he was 58 and my mother was 65. My father had rheumatic fever before penicillin came in. And my mother got pneumonia before the antibiotics came in. They gave her sulfanilamide and that killed an awful lot of people.
And where did you live in Wilmington?
We lived on Madison Street. First was 307, and then we moved down to 303, but they had a dry goods store.
At that time?
At both places. When they came to Wilmington, they opened a dry goods store. Now, Madison Street there was full. Across the street was Mr. Bader, who had a nephew who was a lawyer, and a fish store, and at the corner was a drug store, and on this side was the a big shoe store. I should know the name, but names elude me now. And that took up through half of the street. And there was next door to us, the 307, was a Mr. Wilhelm, who's a German.
So you lived near 2nd Street?
Well, we invited up the corner of 3rd
right.
Street.
You were, right. So even though you were on 3rd, you were close to the shopping area where many Jews came.
That you had to go, that was Orange Street and so forth.
Right.
They weren't really not near us.
Oh, they weren't?
Oh, no. Uh-huh. You had to walk there. My grandmother would go there and I'd come home from school, go get Baba, she's on 2nd Street, go get Baba, she's up to...
Right.
It was half the job when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
Go get Baba. My grandmother, it was my grandmother, and six of us, and my younger sister was born here.
So that all those people, your parents, your grandmother, and the six children all lived in one house.
Yeah, and then it got to be 7 children, because
right.
My younger sister was born 3 years after we got here. So we moved to 303.
Because that was larger.
It was a larger store, larger property. It was a 3-story property with lots of rooms. And it was a colonial house.
Mm.
It was a real, used to be a mansion.
Mm.
Now, it wasn't a mansion when we lived in
yeah.
it, but it was at one point
right.
a mansion.
And where did you go to school?
I went to number 3 school, then to number 4 school, and Wilmington High School, and not a single school exists that I went to in
they're
Wilmington.
All,
they're all gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I went down one day with my daughter to show her Madison Street, and everything's gone. There's nothing there to remind you of anything whatsoever.
Tell me, what was it like growing up being Jewish in Wilmington? as you recall.
Well, we were right near the Italians down here. They were all Italians. Easter was pretty treacherous, of course. Any time you walked out, you had this, hello, Christ killer. I mean, you got used to it. And I know no Jewish boy would go into Brownstown by himself.
And where was Brownstown?
Well, where it is today, down there, South Maryland Avenue.
South Maryland Avenue.
Because they'd be murdered. I mean, that's how bad it was. On our street, we got along, except when Hitler came in, the man next door to us, Mr. Bacon, used to have a restaurant. He was kind of wealthy and powerful, and then he lost everything. But he and the Polish people who bought the, they next to us was a, what do you call them today? I don't know what. Well, it's not a liquor store. Everybody went in and had a place to sit, you know. And Mr. Lynch had that place, and when he died, Polish people bought him. My parents both spoke Polish. Well, this Polish woman and Mr. Bacon would come out every day and talk about how wonderful Hitler was. Oh, Hitler, what a wonderful man. And my father used to like to sit outside, but he couldn't stand it. Of course, the minute that Hitler invaded Poland, and there was a Polish hour on television and radio every morning, she'd come in to my mother crying, Hitler. My mother, it was so, she had to listen to it, but she was furious. And the Mr. Bacon, who loved Hitler so much, the Depression came along, his water was stopped. He had no electric, he had nothing. We supplied him with water, and he'd come in regularly, Governor, can you give me $5? And Governor, we gave him $5. And
why did they call you Governor?
He'd call my father. That was, he was being nice, you know, Governor. That was his term of when he wanted to borrow money, or I don't think he ever paid it back. And my mother used to call the Catholic Welfare Guild regularly to give him a ton of coal. I mean, it was, the Depression was, it was terrible, and yet it was nicer than it is today.
Why do you say that?
Because everybody was kind to everybody. Mm-hmm. There was a little laundress who lived across the street who was, you know, she had no retirement, no anything. People would make meals and always bring her something. Of course, my mother didn't work like that. She got hold of my brother and went up to see Grace Brewer and got the woman a little pension. And my mother did things very quietly instead of everybody's. When I went to Federation, I was surprised to see that this case and that case was brought to our attention by Mrs. Cohen. There was a little lady, Mrs. Katz, who used to come around regularly, and my mother would give her $25, and she'd go around and distribute the $25. And one day I was in the store by myself. They had gone to, I don't know where they'd gone. And a little old Jewish man came in and said, can you give me $20? And there wasn't even $20 in the cash register. And I said, I come back on my pantry. Have you had a strange man?
Yeah.
And when I told my parents, they said, oh, you should have given it to Mr. So-and-so. And I didn't know that they were handing him $20 regularly. But my mother, once I got so annoyed at her, and I said, don't you ever want anything for yourself? Don't you want anything? Don't you ever want to be happy? And she said, well, I'll tell you, I spent my life thinking about what happiness is, and I decided there's only one form of happiness, is to do something for someone less fortunate than yourself.
Oh, wow. She was way ahead of her.
She was. The older I get, the more I appreciate my mother. Mm-hmm. I think she was quite remarkable. I really do. Mm. I thought she was... her instincts were wonderful. Even when a man next to her was so terrible, she called the Catholic Welfare Guild regularly.
To help him.
To help him.
Well, did your family make a good living?
Well, my mother was, she never had a wasted motion, really. We always had food, and my grandmother was a wonderful cook. I didn't appreciate it. My uncle talked about her being a great cook until I got married and went out, and people would say, wait till you taste so-and-so's this and that. I don't know what they're talking about. We grew up with a very nice diet because the farmer's market was in front of our house. Mm. We didn't eat like the other Jewish people. And I thought we were peculiar as well as the strange people.
How did the other Jewish people eat?
Well, I mean, they ate the big cookies and things that were full of schmaltz and full of everything. We ate them. We had not.
Healthy.
We had baskets of sickle pears, baskets of apples, baskets of cantaloupes. I mean, we had all fresh
fruit.
Vegetables
mm-hmm.
and vegetable and stuff. And besides which, my mother felt the Italians ate a better diet than Jews did. She'd always ask them, how do you make this and how do you make that and how do you make the other? So our food habits were different. And we'd have chopped liver, but occasionally we didn't have it. You know.
Did your family, did they have a Jewish education?
We all went to Hebrew school.
Where'd you go?
I went to Addis Kodesh Hebrew School. And I don't know if you know about Alice Greenberg and what happened
to
her.
What happened?
Well, Alice Greenberg was my teacher. I had a lot of teachers there, but we all loved her. She was just, we thought she was wonderful. She had a beautiful singing voice and everything. And she was in love with Mr. Margolin, the principal, who belonged in a Dickens story and who was, we thought, revolting and so forth. And a Yom Kippur, I remember, we went to synagogue and saw Alice and hello and everything, and then that night she committed suicide. Don't you know anything about her?
No. Kid? Why?
Because she was pregnant and Mr. Margolin wouldn't marry her.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, I'm surprised that nobody really knows about that from the Hebrew school. I think that's that when I quit Hebrew school and everything.
You quit at that time?
I don't remember if that's the time or not. Sam Arsh, you know, and his family were very common in the Scottish synagogue. Mm. My parents belonged to both Pesach and Lemeth and Addis Kodesh. For the high holidays, because Pesach and Lemeth was so close and they could walk to it. But on Saturdays, my grandmother went every Saturday to Addis Kodesh, and we had to walk her home because we had to go to the kids. We went to services. Now, I think my oldest brothers had private lessons with Rabbi Resitz, I think was the name.
From Chesed Shalemit?
Well, yeah, but I guess he was just in general.
Uh-huh.
He lived there down on West Street, mm-hmm. Second and West, I believe. And I think that's how they went. My brother Morris was the first one to be bar mitzvah at Addis Kodesh, because I remember that distinctly. And my other brother, see, I had my brother Herman. See, my mother and father were married in Philadelphia, and my mother came over to this country in 1901 with her grandmother. And her grandmother's had, her son was here in Philadelphia, because one of the daughters was born in 1896, went to see her when she was very sick, and she told us her history. So my mother lived with them when she came over. My mother was a linguist. She knew five languages perfectly and came here to know one word of English. She said she cried herself to sleep every night for the longest time.
And how did she learn English?
By simply picking it up. And
she didn't go to school.
My father went to night school.
Right.
But I don't think my mother did. As a matter of fact, in Europe, one of the few stories I know, see, they lived in Lithuania. They lived right on the very edge in Rascinia. They overlooked what was then the German corridor, it's now the Polish corridor, right at the corner where Poland comes and where Germany. And she used to, all I had to do was go over a bridge into Germany. They lived in a big city. And her ideal woman was the Abakaz wife. And from hearing her talk, I realized that Lithuanian wasn't at all like Russian. And she said it was a very musical language and a lot of French in it. I never knew what a shaitel was. My grandmother had a peruke. I didn't know a dinst. They had an esclav. You know, so all the terms were different.
So a dinst, meaning a maid,
was an esclav in Lithuania.
Uh-huh.
And they went out in the equipage. But the lawyer's wife, the abacus wife, they had a big department store. My mother used to work there after school. And my grandmother, who was her first marriage, she married a shivabacher who died, I think, of TB early, and she didn't have any kids. So she next marriage was to a man who had a son who had been married. And that was So my grandmother married, and my grandmother had a lot of babies, apparently. And she took my mother out of school, and my mother loved school because she was a wonderful student. And my mother ran away from home, she said, and for 3 days she lived underneath the counters in the department store. So I wish I'd call Esther more stories.
Yeah.
But that one I knew. And my grandmother lived with us, and I never saw anybody nicer to a woman than my mother was to her mother.
Her mother.
Oh, my goodness. I'm not sure she deserved it. She was a marvelous cook, as I realized afterwards. I look at these hamantaschen people make and think, that's what they call hamantaschen, not in my house. Rose Cohen would tell you, and Edna Cohen, that my grandmother's gefilte fish, my grandmother's everything. People came with stuff, and she would give them all the stuff. I lived with it. I didn't know it was special. I thought it was... Well, it's good.
You've learned since then.
I realized that what my uncle used to rave to people about what a wonderful cook my mother-in-law is. He knew what he was talking about. I didn't know what he was talking about.
So when you went to school, were there many Jewish children?
No, there were about 3 or 4 of us. The Golden Girl, so they're both, you know, with the plumber.
What was their name?
Well, she was, oh God.
Well, that's all right. Their Golden. Last name was Golden.
Golden. Then there was Feldman, Millie Feldman, whose father was a tailor on third in Monroe, I guess. Jack Lundy was in the class.
So that was Jack Lundy opened up he married Shapiro's daughter, and it became, first it was Shapiro's, then it was Lundy's.
Yeah. Well, he
Delicatessen
was, well, it was
on
Second Street.
Yeah.
Right. He was Jacob Lundy, of course, who's called Jack now. And I'm trying to think who else. We had about 4 or 5.
So you didn't have any problem in your classes because they were all immigrant children.
Not all, no. We had we had some Irish and we had some...
Well, they were all immigrants, yeah.
The funny thing is, the girls I went to school with in number 4 school, which was the grammar school, you know, 7th and 8th grade. When I was at Delaware, and I came back one summer, and I said, oh my goodness, here's Helen Stewart. She's my sister. Said, oh, she's one of the prostitutes who are running around this neighborhood. Well, the woman she was running with, I could understand, but Helen Stewart, I guess that was her name, was one of those elegant looking persons that you had to have a movie of, the society girl, and she was bright. And she was a girl who even in during the Depression could get a job, because there were jobs.
Uh-huh.
She was bright enough and very attractive. And I couldn't believe that she was one of the gang of prostitutes running through the city, our neighborhood. It was shocking to me. So.
But the fact that you went to Delaware was very unusual, the university, because first of all, the time you went to the university, women normally didn't go to the university.
Well, my class.
And second of all, Jewish people.
Yeah, well, we had about 4 or 5 of us.
At the University of Delaware.
In my class. Yeah, my older sister was there. Miriam Yellner and Sarah Goldstein, who's a number of years older than me, graduated, and Rosalie Berman. They're the only 2 earlier that I can remember. You should get Sarah Goldstein. Has anybody talked to her?
No, I haven't.
I think they should, because she lived there, but she's older than I am.
Yeah.
But at Delaware, we just took for granted. Of course, we lived at my aunt's house.
You didn't live at the university.
No,
I
didn't commute. We lived at my aunt's house.
Oh, in Newark.
Newark, all of us. Now, my brothers were there. They worked. My uncle built the theater, so they took money at night. They were the cash, and they worked and helped in this, the store.
So you didn't live in the dormitories, but
no.
You all went.
But my friends were there, so forth.
But even so, most immigrants didn't send their children to college, their daughters to college.
Well, our house was just taken for granted. I was just 16 when I got out of high school. Before my 16th birthday, what are you going to do? I looked like a baby. When I was in college, the teachers would say...
What did you take at the university?
I was a French major because I was probably the best French student they ever had, except maybe earlier, I don't know.
Oh, what's her anti-Semitism on the campus?
Well, that's what I wanted to talk to you. No, not on the campus. However,
what year was it that you went?
I went in 1930 to 1934. I got out in 1934. We had a Spanish, well, let me tell you one thing. When I went, we suddenly had an influx of all the society girls because the Depression was on, and they were all came to Delaware, a whole bunch of them from Westover Hills and all over. And as a matter of fact, you've seen in the paper the revival of Judge Morris's home. You've seen that pictures in the paper. Well, his daughter Mary Morris.
Is that you Morris?
Yeah, you
the
Morris.
The library at the university.
Yeah. And his daughter Mary Morris was in my class, but she wouldn't sit with us. She sat in the back. She wouldn't sit. And our classes, you know, we didn't have full classes. It was a couple of rows.
At that time, there was a women's college and a men's college.
Well, when you went, I suppose I wanted to ask you, were they together then?
No.
They were still separate colleges.
They joined right, I started in 39, so they joined at World War II. So just as I graduated, they combined.
Because, did you still have Dean Robinson?
But we still had Dean Robinson. And when we graduated, it was the women's college who graduated. But right after us, I think they combined.
Of course, but I had all the male teachers. I had Dr. Seifert and Dr. Allen and Mr. Byam and Dr. Day and Dr. Crooks and Dr. Clement and Mr. Jack Valentine Noble. Mr. Noble taught Spanish. Now, he was an Englishman whose father had been a factory worker up in one of the industrial towns like Manchester or Birmingham, England. And of course, a factory worker's son didn't get to be a college professor, not in England at that time. I'm not sure it's too much better now, I don't know. But he had to go overseas, and anyhow, he was our Spanish professor. And in our class was Lucy Hickman and Jean Fullerton. They were seniors, I guess, when I was, I think that Lucy was in my older sister's class. Mr. Noble used to go to Philadelphia, he was a bachelor, and go to old bookshops and find all kinds of books that had Sanskrit, various things. He'd come into the class and read from them, and he would particularly find salacious things, not real bad, but to shock his shock brigade, as he called them. I often used to walk up to Main Street with him. But at that point, did you have foreign studies students come
to you?
Yes,
we did.
We had, I think, I guess it was the first year, a German foreign studies student. Barbara Sabine was at women's college, and at men's college was Freddie Max, who was Jewish. France. Barbara Sabine was an exuberant person, everything, and everything was spiritual. We were over in awe, everything spiritual. Did you have a student who had everything spiritual? I had painted her in the art class, as a matter of fact, and I'm so sorry all that stuff is gone. But Barbara Sabine, every time Mr. Noble would come in with some stuff that he'd read, no, it didn't happen, no, it didn't happen. Came in one day and was talking about the Middle Ages, the women were on a pedestal. Oh, no, he was so angry. He came in the next time, threw his books on the desk and said, Miss Sabine, for your information, I'd like to read you something by an expert. And he read about what it was. And then he said, Miss Sabine, as far as I'm concerned, you can go back to Germany or to Hades and to the Jew baiting, and that's whatever it was, and he slammed his books and walked out. That was the end of Mr. Noble. Anyhow, the dean called us all in. There must have only been about eight of us. I was the only Jewish girl. So when I came in, it was, you know, how she talked. I just want you to know, before we talk about this, that I've spent the whole summer in Germany this past summer. And I can tell you that all these stories coming out of Germany are lies.
That's what your dean said?
Yes.
And what year was that?
Had to be 1932 or 3, either one, because it wasn't my last year, I don't think. But she went on with how it was just wonderful. Now tell me your story. And I told her as truthfully as I could tell it. Meantime, my cousin Jolly had gone to a lecture the night before.
Jolly Hanlow.
Yeah.
With, that's His real name was?
Alvin.
Alvin.
It was originally Isidore, but he changed it to Alvin.
And that was the second son?
The second. Herman was the first.
Herman was the first.
And then Jolly, then Mike.
That's your uncle and aunt.
Yeah, and then Dorothy.
Uh-huh.
Anyhow, he had gone to a lecture, and Hollyan had just come back from Germany, too.
Hollyan, President Hollyan.
Yeah.
Hollyan, who was president of the University of Delaware.
Yeah. He was telling them that he just came back from Germany, and they're not persecuting Jews. It's only black Jews they're persecuting. And many times, I think it was somebody from Swarthmore College had sent around a circular and was on the bulletin board for people to sign protesting about Hitler's treatment of Jews, but no Jews are supposed to sign it. And nobody ever signed that. Not a single. I don't think it's because they were anti-Jewish. I don't think they looked and, you know, it was something that didn't concern
them. Didn't interest them.
But Dean Robinson, she didn't see a thing. It was all perfectly lovely.
Well.
And all the stories were lies.
Well, I guess in 1932, some people still didn't believe that.
But she was there and she didn't see anything. Although, one of the girls I used to paint with, she came from Louisiana, and her father was head of the Board of Education or something in Louisiana, and she went over during that time, and she remembered, she said, we were out at night, and stormtroopers would come in, and we ran, and everybody was constant, because she said we ran from place to place, but they thought they were having a good time, you know, it was exciting to them. But she did see stormtroopers.
Yeah.
But Dean Robinson didn't see any.
When did you meet Ben?
Well,
your future husband.
I had three jobs, and I'm proud to say that each job I had, somebody came and looked for me. My first job was at Leslie Gluckman's office. Well, he was friends with my brother.
Leslie was a lawyer.
Lawyer.
Right.
And everybody, and he knew my brother, and he knew my family, went to college, and they needed somebody in the office, and he called and wondered, would I go to work? And I said, well, I didn't know shorthand or typing, but I went to work. And Frieda Hamm was actually running the office. Arthur worked, and Leslie, and Frieda.
Frieda Barsky was the...
She married Dr. Joseph Barsky.
Yeah, so she was the wife of Dr. Barsky.
Oh, God, he was crazy about her. Anyhow, I worked there for years, and then Leslie was a magistrate. You know, his father, Barnard Gluckman,
right.
And Barnett was the noted Jewish magistrate.
Right.
And Leslie, and we got all the cases with the lawyers, because he was a lawyer, all the other magistrates' office, and we had... all the well-known lawyers in town came
set
there. Then Dave Waxman became magistrate after Leslie's time ran out. And so Frieda got married, and I became...
Frieda married Dr. Barsky.
And I became the chief worker at Dave Waxman's place. And of course, the war came along, and he went to war, and then I don't like to tell you who the next one was, but anyhow, I'd like to tell you that, I don't know, did you know anything about the Avoda Club?
Avoda, yeah, sure.
Well, they used to...
It was a Jewish service organization.
Yeah, they're usually in A-B-O-D-A. Town.
A-V-O-D-A.
Yeah. And they were, most of the people who went were the lawyers on Market Street or businessmen and so forth. They met once a month on Thursdays. And right during before we weren't in it completely, Dave came back and told me that they were talking about
That's
the war.
That's Dave?
Dave Waxman.
Waxman. And he was a...
He had gone to law school, but his group, not because they didn't pass anybody, because... If you recall before that, the Cannon guy, the Cannon had embezzled some money or something, and no Jewish boy was allowed to become a lawyer. They just automatically didn't pass them. So he became the magistrate. I don't know who was responsible for getting him the job. But once they had a meeting, and they were talking, and Dave got up and said, wait till our pilots get in there. Wait till our airplanes get up there. We will see. And one of the Germans jumped up and said, I will shoot you down like dogs. Our German refugees were more German than the Germans were, some of them. I mean, that was shocking. They were stunned.
You mean German Jews said this? Jews had run out of Germany, said that we'll shoot them down. So they had a great allegiance to the country
Germany,
they left.
Yeah. And, you know, and then, Jews apparently took to German culture like ducks to water. They surpassed the Germans, I think, in everything, and I think the Germans were jealous. But the Jews who came here were German. I mean, you know, eventually, but that was, they were so shocked they couldn't believe that this guy who was saved by Americans
would say that. Yeah.
Anyhow, Dave got into the war, and then the next magistrate, I don't like to say bad things about somebody.
But you're allowed to.
Joe Green, do you know who Joe Green was?
Yeah.
Became the magistrate, yeah. And I was the chief person in the office, yeah. And I didn't like him.
It was a political job.
Oh, yeah. But they usually gave him...
Because I think he had been a photographer.
Whatever he was a war healer, what I know him as.
Yeah.
And during the war, I don't think you realize that, for instance, Drabeau, any company that had anything to do with the war, making stuff, people had to be brought in and swear that I will pledge allegiance and I will not, and just signed an affidavit.
They had to take an oath of loyalty?
Yes.
Before they went to work for that organization.
Yeah. And Drabeau used to bring in their people and you sign an